shall know the truth, and the truth shall make you free. The Herald of Truth broadcast is on the air, a program of spirit and truth dedicated to teaching the way of God more perfectly. These broadcasts contain keys to help unlock knowledge and reveal hidden truths of the Bible in these last days. Christians called to a higher level of understanding will be given Bible-based solutions to their personal as well as national problems. They will want to find out more about their part in God's plan. Our mailing address is Kingdom Identity Ministries, Post Office Box 1021, Harrison, Arkansas 72602, and will be given again at the end of this broadcast.
Hello, this is Brother Mike of Kingdom Identity Ministries, welcoming you to another one of our first Sunday Kingdom Concepts broadcast. Last month, we didn't have a broadcast because much of Nashville, Tennessee was underwater. Our flagship station, WWCR, was off the air, and our studio in Nashville, where our engineer streams out the program and takes care of the calls, incoming calls and the board and so on, his office was inaccessible. So we were off the air, but we're happy to be back on the air tonight. Our last program was in April with money expert Bruce McCarthy, biblical money, I should say, biblical money and economics expert Bruce McCarthy. That was a well-received program. We had a number of times the whole board lit up with calls, and we've had favorable both letters and phone calls on that program. So I've invited him to be our guest again this month and continue on the subject of biblical money and the biblical economic system. I would ask our callers to be brief in their calls so we can get everybody in and give our guests time to comment. Our call line is toll-free, 877-924-7722. I'll repeat that at 877-924-7722. You can remember that by 877-YAHS-RACE. I should also give you the frequency of our broadcast. WWCR at 4.840 megahertz, WBCQ at 7.415 megahertz. There's streams from both of those stations live, transmitter 3 at WWCR and the stream over at WBCQ. You can also go to our website, kingidentity.com, KingIdentity.com. Go to the radio page. You'll see the streams from the two stations, but you'll also see a stream at the bottom directly from our studio in Nashville giving you MP3 players, Windows Media, Real Player, etc. So you can go there. You can also see a link to the radio archives and listen to those anytime online. So without further ado, I'd like to welcome our guest, Bruce McCarthy, back on the air. Welcome, brother.
Hey, thank you very much, Mike. Good to be on.
Maybe we should start by summarizing a little bit of what was spoken of in April.
Well, I don't exactly know where we start. I guess we start with some very basic fundamental truths concerning definitions of terms. We can't discuss the subject of money, banking, credit without defining the terms that are used in that field. And it will be our goal, again, to properly, correctly, succinctly define the words money, credit, debt, dollar. Many of the words which are used daily, frequently, by virtually everyone, probably from the age of 5 on up, and yet words that people cannot accurately define. It's very much like discussing the subject of Israel, Gentile, and Jew. Very difficult to discuss those subjects without giving an accurate definition for them. So we will attempt to do that. And our goal, of course, is to promote the idea of substantive money, which I believe can be shown from Scripture to be the rationale God would have us to apply in the realm of economics. Fortunately, we live in a world which insists on using credit as a substitute for money, and many people who are reformers and advocates of getting rid of the Federal Reserve System, actually advocate continuing with the same basic type of system that we have right now under the private Federal Reserve System, but instead they want it to be operated by the federal government. And they seem to think that there's a constitutional mandate for doing that, and of course it is our position that the Constitution does not advocate the issuance of legal tender or credit instruments of any sort, that the Bible does not do so either.
You might start with the definition of money.
Well, sure. Money is the single word equivalent to three words that people use quite often, which is the word words medium of exchange. Just like the word lake is the single word equivalent for a body of water completely surrounded by land. One word substitutes for many words. But there is no such thing in and of itself that is money. Money is an abstract term. Back in the 1800s, we were once using, in this country, gold and silver, at least for public purposes, as money. Therefore, we were using gold and silver as the medium of exchange. Today, we're not using any tangible thing as a medium of exchange. Dollars are not a real thing. Dollars are simply the units of measure, decimal system, by which we measure whatever it is that we're using as money. So we'll offer your listeners a reward of 100 pounds of free money if they can identify what the substance of the money is that we are currently using that's measured in dollars as money or as the medium of exchange. If they can identify the substance of that money, I'll give them 100 pounds of it absolutely free.
It's certainly not paper.
No, paper has never been declared to be as money. The numbers in the corners of a $100 bill, for example, the number 100 does not represent a quantity of paper. Paper has never been used as money anywhere in the world at any time, to the best of my knowledge, ever in history. The reason is, Mike, is that it's too heavy. For example, if you and I wanted to purchase a new Cadillac Escalade SUV, and we wanted to pay for it with paper, imagine some kind of paper that would be useful. I think toilet paper is about as useful as any kind of paper that's being manufactured currently. So how much toilet paper would it take to buy a new Cadillac Escalade? I was going to call it an Escapade, I'm sorry. But anyway, it would take probably a couple boxcar loads of toilet paper. Paper is way too heavy to use money and has never been declared as money any time in history.
For money, you'd need a substance and a unit of measure. What are there, three factors?
Yeah, you'd have three indicia. Oh, three elements. You have to have a substance that you're going to use, as you said, as money. And then you're going to have a unit of measure, and then you're going to have a quantity, like the number 1, 5, 10, 20, 50, 100. If you go to a store to purchase, let's say, cheese from a delicatessen supermarket, you can't simply ask the attendant behind the counter for 5 pounds and expect to get anything. The attendant's going to want to know what you want 5 pounds of. So you need the substance. And that's the way it is with virtually anything that you want to acquire. You need to know how much of quantities, again, and a unit of measure. We have numbers of units of measure. Most everybody's familiar with a cubic yard, which is used to measure concrete. We measure almost everything in the Avoirdupois system, which has 16 ounces to the pound, or 7,000 grains to the pound, and your hamburger, your bread, virtually all of our products are measured in the Avoirdupois system. That's literally from the French, which means to have weight. And again, we have a unit of measure, but we need to have the substance. You can't simply order, I want five pounds. You slice it real thin because it improves the flavor. Everybody knows how it gets much better tasting when you shave it. Shave what? Need the substance. And that's what we don't have in our monetary system. We haven't had a substance since we demonetized gold in 1933-34, and we demonetized silver between 1963 and 1968. Since then, the United States has used absolutely no tangible thing as money. And that's extremely significant. There is nothing being used as money. In fact, I don't believe there's a country in the world that's currently using any tangible thing as money. So you might actually say that the world currently has a one-world monetary system, that is, no money. What we use instead is credit, which comes from the Latin word credere, which means to believe. We use faith as if it were money. I think last time we were on, I think we quoted from New York Federal Reserve publication called Keeping Our Money Healthy on page 12, and I'll read it again verbatim. The whole sentence says, and I quote, "And you recall, the Federal Reserve System works only with credit, period. Credit is not a tangible substance. You can see, smell, hear, taste, and or touch. Credit is not a gas, it is not a liquid, and it is not a solid. How do you measure it? You have to use your imagination. If you got it, yes. So we're on a thought stand.
The Bible condemns unjust weights and measures in a number of places. I think we ended last month, or I should say 2 months ago, program talking about a patriot group that is in favor of silver as a substance, but their one troy ounce weight, I believe that's what their coins are, they keep changing the denomination on the front of the coin.
Yes.
Would you comment on that?
Yeah, I think I've talked about that too. It was confusing. I think there was a group called NORFED, which is the National Organization to Reform the Federal Reserve, I think is what it was basically called. And they put out coins. They weighed 1 ounce, 999 fine, pure silver. And then they gave it a dollar denomination on the face of the coin. Well, dollar, what most people don't realize, I think even coin dealers seem to be ignorant of this, is that the United States adopted three systems of weight measurement. We adopted the Avoirdupois system, as I mentioned earlier, or Avoirdupois, AVD period, for those who have seen it in the abbreviated form, wherein we have 16 ounces to the pound, or 7,000 grains to the pound. For those people who load ammunition, the amount of powder that's used in a bullet, in a cartridge, would be weighed in grains, and that grain would be taken from the middle of the stalk of wheat, a shock of wheat at harvest time, and it would take approximately 7,000 grains of wheat to equal 1 pound, the Avoirdupois system. We have another system of weight measurement called troy, which there are 12 ounces to the pound, 5,760 grains. But the United States, when it coined its gold and silver, adopted a third system of weight measurement, and that was decimal system, otherwise known as dollars and cents. And for those people who are familiar with the decimal system, you know that there are 100% to the decimal whole or completeness. And that's why there are 100 cents or 100% to the dollar. The United States was, according to Thomas Jefferson, the first of the present community of nations, that was in the 1700s, to adopt the decimal system for weighing its coinage. And he, for one, was favoring that the use of the ounce for weighing our coins instead of the dollar. But he believed that Congress had resolved the confusion when they defined what they meant by dollar, but you had to go to the Coinage Act of April 2nd, 1792 to read what they meant by it. And virtually no one even knows of that regulation to this day. And most people do not realize that a dollar was simply a unit of weight measurement, a different system. But yes, the Bible commands that we'd have just weights and measures. It does so, for example, in Deuteronomy 25, verses 13 through 15, wherein God said that thou shalt not have in thy bag diverse weights, a great and a small. Thou shalt not have in thine house diverse measures, a great and a small. But thou shalt have a perfect and just weight, a perfect and just measure shalt thou have, that thy days may be lengthened in the land which the Lord thy God giveth thee. And if there's anybody out there who's wondering why we have been displaced, dispossessed from the land, we do not own our land. That's why we have a property tax. It's the proof that we don't own it. The reason is because, according to God's word, we have violated the law of just weights and measures, and we specifically did that in the realm of money.
I believe the biblical money was gold, silver, and copper.
Yes.
And the shekel was a unit of measurement, a weight measurement.
That's right. The shekel was a unit of weight measurement. In fact, you'll find that there are publishers of Bibles who are confused on that issue. I remember seeing a children's Bible that when you opened up the cover, there would be pictures inside the cover showing a menorah, you know, a stick candle holder, and then there would be a picture of a coin, and it would say that that was a shekel. No, the coin was not a shekel. The coin may have been made out of silver, and it may have weighed one shekel, but it was not a shekel in and of itself, any more than a silver coin or a gold coin. Like, for example, most people refer to the old cartwheel coin, pre-1935, that weighed about 3/4 of an ounce. They would call it a silver dollar. No such thing. It was a dollar weight of silver. No one has ever seen a dollar. No one has ever touched a dollar, any more than anybody could touch an ounce, or an inch, gallon, or a gram. Those are just simply intangible units of measure. It's just refreshing to talk with you because I know that you have an understanding of this, and there's so many people who just don't seem to get it.
Yeah, well, a lot of our listening audience has an understanding of this. Let me invite our listening audience to call and participate in the program tonight. The toll-free number is 877-924-7722. That's 877-924-7722. We do have some literature on this subject of money. One is the Temple of Imaginary Money. That's a comic book form, kind of makes the money situation easy to understand. Our guest, Bruce McCarthy, wrote the introduction, 2-page introduction, and then the rest is in comic book or cartoon form and tries to explain how we got into the mess we're in with the federal, not only the Federal Reserve, but the banking system in general. We also have a book titled Babylon's Money by Pastor Compre. That happened to be our program last week, a pre-recorded program, Babylon's Money, an hour version of it. We have the complete version on CD or tape, either one. Just ask for number 148, either CD or tape, on Babylon's Money. But we have the script of the that particular subject, too. I might ask that we add that we ask a donation of $2 for the book. It's a nice printed book, Babylon's Money, and $3 for the comic book on money called The Temple of Imaginary Money. You can write to us at Kingdom Identity Ministries, P.O. Box 1021, Harrison, Arkansas, 72602. Anyway, back to our guest. A lot of people will say that money buys, or what we call money, these Federal Reserve notes, buys me various goods, and that's all that I care about. How are we going to restore to a biblical system from a Federal Reserve system? I realize that as unjust as this system is, that it does represent people's labor. They're given Federal Reserve notes or credit entries in bank accounts, and our goal is to restore God's law in all areas, including, of course, the money issue that we're talking about tonight. How would you go about restoring from an unjust Babylonian system to a biblical system without hurting the people too much in the transition?
Well, we could address this from an idealistic point of view of what if America wanted to change from where we are now to where we ought to be going. And I can give you an idealistic answer, but America's not going in that direction. Oh, we could address it from the standpoint of what can the individual do. And I would rather look at that because that's more practical. But before I do, I would like to go back to the question that you had raised and make sure that I failed to answer it. It just dawned on me that you had talked about this Norfed coin that claims to be on its face. I think they went to $20 on its face, and it was a 1-ounce coin. What I meant to get to, which I had failed to accomplish, was that if you were to convert that 1-ounce coin in the Troy system into the decimal weight, the true decimal weight of that coin would be something around $1.35. it's not a $20 coin. What they did is they gave it a what I'll call a legal tender value, what they said it was psychologically worth, they thought, on the marketplace. And that is adding confusion. I don't know if I hope the listeners are able to follow that, but I didn't want to leave that stone unturned. And if somebody wants to get back to that, I'll go back to it. But as far as the question that you've asked with regards to how do we restore this, we can restore the circulation of lawful money by simply starting to offer substantive money, real money, for purchases that we want to make. But you're going to have to find people on the local level, local merchant, person who owns the store. Walmart, Home Depot, those type of companies are not in the market to even contemplate using hard money. We had several years ago, back in 1984, started a trade network, you may remember, called the Pipeline. Yep. And the whole goal of that was to basically link believers. If you believe the Bible is telling us how we ought to live, then how are we going to conduct our economic transactions? The Apostle Paul had said, and I think it was in 2 Corinthians, around chapter 8, that the members of the church ought to be supplying one another's needs, that there be an equality that might share our abundance with other people. And one of the things we can do is to simply offer hard money at a reasonable rate of exchange and start slowly introducing a small network, just develop a local network, as an alternative to the economic system out there, which uses credit instruments, doesn't force anybody to do anything they don't want to do, certainly isn't unlawful because it is the only lawful means of transaction other than barter available to us. And by degree, you could continue to increase the number of transactions due year to year from credit, you'd start moving slowly into hard money. It wouldn't pose an economic shock or anything of that nature. It would preserve a person's privacy, give him an ability to trade in just weights and measures. That's a very simplistic answer, but it's about the best we could probably do in short order.
Of course, the first step is to educate the people, which is what we're trying to do tonight.
Right. There's no reason to abandon the system we have if the system we have out there is perfectly legitimate and is honest and has no flaws. The problem is our system is unjust from start to finish. It violates every commandment of Scripture, violates the law with regards to theft, because the first issuer of these credit instruments, greenies that most people call Federal Reserve notes, no, they don't even call them that, do they? They call them money. They aren't money. But what they call money is given to the first party at no cost. The United States Treasury and the Federal Reserve System pay absolutely nothing for those instruments. Now, there are people out here who give up their goods and services to get those green things, and they've paid a price. But the first party pays nothing to get those, and consequently is able to confiscate the goods and services of the rest of the non-bank public. That's the beauty of the system. Look at it from the Babylonian perspective. It's a wonderful system of confiscation, and the public generally doesn't figure it out. Yet, intuitively, the public knows that it can't cost much to print a $1 bill or a $100 bill. In fact, intuitively, the public knows that a $100 bill doesn't cost any more, which is why counterfeiters don't bother with ones, do they? Counterfeiters start usually with 20s and work their way up because there's no more ink, no more labor, and no more rag. It's copper, it's cotton and linen. Take those things. There's no more rag in those things in the higher denominations than in the lower denominations. And the Treasury and the Federal Reserve both admit that $100 bills cost the same as $1 bills. And a few years ago, they were getting them, they said, for 3 cents apiece. Well, there's probably nobody in your audience who wouldn't like to get $100 bills for 3 cents apiece. Okay? That's quite
right,
a market.
I think that the public in general, although they don't know the biblical solution, they are realizing that there is inflation going on, and I think pretty soon they're going to see hyperinflation where what was worth $100 maybe this year can only be bought for, I mean, will have to be bought maybe for 500 or 1,000.
Yeah, you bring up a good subject, which is the reason why people should be paying very close attention to the subject. That is the subject of inflation. And so with that, I will turn to a publication that the Federal Reserve Bank of Philadelphia puts out, and it's called Steering a Course Between Inflation and Unemployment. Now, that means it's basically steering a course between a rock and a hard place. We don't want unemployment, and we don't want inflation either. But this system is going to give you one or the other, or it will give you both. You don't have a choice with a credit system, and there's a reason for that. But I'll give you the reason that they give for why we should be paying close attention. And they'll give Germany as an example. And I'll quote from page 8 of this publication. It was written by Lawrence C. Murdoch, who was the vice president of the Federal Reserve Bank of Philadelphia at that time. He said, quote, in the 3 years prior to December 1923, German wholesale prices rose more than a trillion times. In 3 years, the price of goods and services didn't rise 5%, 10%. It rose a trillionfold with a T. Now, when the people finally reached a point where they could scarcely acquire anything with even billion-dollar mark notes, that's what they were issuing. They were issuing mark notes that were up in the, they would call them, milliard, which was a billion. I have a German mark note, for example. It was a 1,000 mark note, and it was overprinted. Ein Milliard Mark. It became a billion. Who said? The government said. Based on what? Based on pure fraud. But you couldn't buy anything with just a few marks here and there. Postage stamps. I have postage stamps way up into the millions, hundreds of millions of marks, just to purchase a postage stamp. When back in 1914, 1.5 marks of silver would buy you a pound of butter. In 1914, a pound of butter was 1.5 marks. By 1918, the price of a pound of butter had reached all of 3 marks. It went up 100% in 4 years. 4 years later, 1922, the price of a pound of butter was 2,700 marks. In the summer of the same year, a pound of butter was up to 150,000 marks. And by the winter of that year, it was over 6 billion marks for a pound of butter. In fact, Murdoch goes on to say on page 9 that beneficiaries seldom bothered to collect on life insurance policies because the proceeds often were worth less than the current price of a stamp to notify the company. He also went on to say that inflation accelerated so fast that many restaurant patrons paid in advance because if they waited until they finished eating the meal, the price of that meal might double. That's how fast prices were going up. And that was in an inflationary economy, which was using credit as if it were money. And, of course, the credit was being passed around on instruments made out of paper, high rag content paper. But that stuff is easily created. So the temptation to create more and more of it just can't be resisted by government because, as Solomon said, money answereth all things.
Well, certainly within the last year or two, we've had a large amount, not only of the bailouts, but the spending programs where they're just printing money.
Yeah. And the communities, I've got one right near us, which has the signs up, you know, this highway is part of the Redevelopment Reinvestment Act, you know. They're all begging for this imaginary money, these grants that come out of Washington, D.C. And what the public doesn't realize is that somebody is going to be made to pay the principal and the interest. You're going to have to pay that back on all of these grants. Every dollar that's created, and it's being created out of absolutely nothing, is coming into the marketplace with an interest burden added to it. So every one of these billions, now trillions, actually, this bailout is well into the trillions. All of that is now carrying an additional interest burden, and the public is going to have to pay that back. And they're going to pay it back through the most hideous tax that we have, and that tax is called inflation. You'll see that in prices of goods.
A little bit ago, we had a caller online, too, and I'd like to have him or her invite them to call again because it was dropped off the line. So if anybody would like to participate in the program, number is 877-924-7722. That's a toll-free number. I see we have a caller on line two again, so we'll take that caller. I believe our toll-free number, 877-924-7722, not only works in the United States, but we've had calls in the past from Canada, so we'd invite them to call too. Fred in Pennsylvania.
Hi. I wanted to say that I haven't heard anything practical from your guest, only the kind of talk that would basically split up well-meaning people who want to solve the same problem that he wants to solve. There's nothing encouraging or practical from your guest so far.
Well, Bruce, would you like to comment on that?
Well, I'll offer something practical, but number one, first off, in order to solve a problem, you have to identify it. Then you have to understand it. There are many people who have addressed this problem, but they haven't expressed a great deal of understanding of the problem. What I find happening, getting some feedback or something.
Yeah, we are getting an echo.
Most people are waiting for a government solution. This is a position that's taken by the social credit advocates, for example, and the people who are advocating the United States notes, is they're waiting for Congress to come along with a solution. There is a solution, and that is simply to apply the law of just weights and measure and to start using something as money.
Excuse me, Bruce. I believe it's, the feedback's coming from Fred. You need to turn your radio down.
I don't have a radio on, but I just want to say that the NORFED organization, even though I did have some problems with what they were doing, I think they did have over 100,000 participants, and I don't see this theologically based talk doing anything.
Well, you haven't given us very much time, Fred. I mean, I think I've only been on this program right now 35 minutes, and I haven't spoken 35 minutes. I have a 14-hour video presentation I did at 5. It took a fair amount of that time, first off, to undo all of the confusion, because we're dealing, first off, with a fraudulent system which uses deception. So it takes a fair amount of time. How does the Arkansas hillbilly say it? You know, it's not so much in not knowing as knowing what ain't so. So it takes a fair amount of time to unlearn what it is that we think we know that we don't understand. Then start putting the pieces back together to show why it is that we need to start using substantive money. Now, you and I, Fred.
Hello, Bruce.
Yeah, I don't have a problem with back in reinforcing the good that was done. There was actually some good done in early history in the United States from the 1700s right up to until about the Federal Reserve's creation in 1913. If one were to look at basic price levels, you would see from a distance, if you were looking at a price level chart from 1800 to 1912, 1913, you would see from a distance that the line looked almost like a straight line. Very little variation in prices. After the Federal Reserve is created, you see the lines start to rise, and by the time you get to about 1968, when we finally have embraced credit as being our money substitute, we see that the curve starts moving upward in that hyperbolic direction. And as we get closer and closer to the year 2010, it takes on a more vertical component. So I could say that if we go back and look at American history, we could say that there must be something that we could learn from that, and that was that predominantly we were using hard money. Now, who's going to put hard money back into circulation? It's going to have to have to be somebody who knows that the present system is going in the wrong direction and has been for a long time.
Fred,
present system uses approximately 300 million people. If you want to look at how many people are using a system, let's take the Federal Reserve System. There are approximately 300 million people in the United States who are using that system. That's not the direction I want to go, but that's the one that's the most popular. I'm up against tremendous odds. I can't get mainstream media coverage for reasons that you ought to know quite well why. But I did start up a trade network years ago, back in 1984. It wasn't terribly successful. We never had more than probably 150 people participating in it. But for 10 years and 3 months, I did not accept Federal Reserve notes. I actually was able to survive using hard money. Now, life wasn't easy. I didn't gain any weight, I can assure you. It was about the most awkward period of my life that I had ever lived. But I did prove a point. You could survive. You could live and not touch a Federal Reserve.
Fred dropped off the line. I assume he's listening on the radio. But we do have another caller, Roman from Ohio on line 3. Hello, Roman.
Yes, hello. Am I on?
Yes, hello? You're on the air.
Okay, getting back to something that your speaker, by the way, could you say his name? Because I didn't quite get it when I was, what's his name?
Bruce McCarthy.
Bruce, okay, McCarthy. Okay, now I did happen to read the Travels of Marco Polo, you know, 30 years ago, maybe, or 25 years ago. And the way I understand what Marco Polo said was that in the areas where Kublai Khan had did his military conquest, where Marco Polo and that small army was traveling around, they were using paper currency. I don't know if he used the word script or what exactly was the word, but that would be one of the places in history that I've read about where they did have paper currency. Did you comment on that, or am I wrong on that, or what's up with that?
Well, you could say the same thing of present-day system here in the United States or in Europe or in Asia. The whole world supposedly uses paper currency. Currency, however, is what is current as money. There is no substance that is current as money, not even the paper. The numbers in the corner on the paper currency, so-called, does not represent quantities of paper. Is what I'm saying. It represents quantities of an intangible called credit or belief, if you will. There was a saying that came out of that part of the world through which Marco Polo traveled, and that was disperse the money and collect the people. Collect the money and disperse the people.
Oh, I don't know. I didn't hear that.
The people are controlled by the issuance of credit instruments from the central authority. Well, the public is dependent upon all of that.
Kublai Khan controlled the whole world of his part of the world with the military conquest and with the military. That's how he controlled everybody.
Yeah, well, you control everybody today with credit. That's what everybody's dependent upon. But the love of
there would be a difference between a redeemable banknote and just a credit instrument, too.
What's that again?
I said there would be a difference between a redeemable banknote or type instrument and a credit instrument such as a Federal Reserve note.
Well, I think that's what Bruce is driving to. That's where he wants to go.
No, I'm not an advocate of redeemable notes, and there's a reason for that, not only constitutionally but biblically. I'm also getting another feedback again for some reason or other, but... A legitimate note is a promise to pay the money that backs that note. The problem is that there is no way for the people who are using those notes to know how much money there is that actually sustains the circulation of those notes. There has always been overissuance of notes.
Right. Okay? I get that. Hey, can I ask another question, or do you have too many people waiting on the line there?
No, that's fine.
My second question is, there was a time, about 20 years ago, I'd have an ounce, I'm talking a troy ounce of silver, or a troy ounce of gold, I'd put it on my scale, and I could count off 10 pennies, 10 copper pennies. would equal, by my little scale there, the 1 troy ounce. Now, what I'm wondering about is with all their new metallurgy and all the copper pennies that don't have real copper and they've got some other alloys in them, can you still take 10 pennies and weigh it off? And would 10 pennies still equal 1 troy ounce?
I don't recall. The present pennies are made out of about 97% zinc. Only about 2 points. It's not quite 3% copper in the present pennies.
Yeah, but I'm just saying, just take 10 pennies and weigh them out and balance it out against 1 troy ounce of gold, let's say. Or can you still do that? Or maybe you've never heard of that
before. I don't know,
but you don't know.
A penny, even when it was made out of copper, was just a token. It wasn't money.
Well, I know, but getting back to the weights, that's
okay.
One of the weights that I know. Well, okay, thanks, Bruce. I'll get off the line and let somebody else get. Thank you very much. Have a good evening.
I don't know if I answered his questions adequately. I'm sure exactly sure what kind of answer he's looking for on that one.
I suppose there's different degrees of fraud. If there was a genuinely backed note by somebody, and even though it leads to theft in the wrong long run versus something that's pure credit. I know that Revelation 18, I read Revelation 18, which is a collapse of the money system, and it appears to me that it's imminent time we're going through today. I do know that it says her plagues will come in one day. It also says in 18:10, where in 1 hour is thy judgment come. And the merchants of the earth, Jews, I'll say it here, we say it on the program all the time. In Revelation 18, it says, alas, alas, that great city, Babylon, is falling. In the Greek there, it says, oi, oi, Babylon is falling. Anyway, it appears that the fall will come very quickly. And it also appears to me, by current events, I don't want to say that I'm a prophet or even predicting, but it's going to come in the future, and not too distant future, because that's the way we're headed. And if we're going to change to a righteous money system, something has to replace inflated Federal Reserve notes. It would be better to have a righteous biblical money system than have all these substitutes out there, either silver with various changing denominations on them, or a Federal Reserve system that's been nationalized, et cetera, et cetera. Would you like to comment on that?
Well, yeah, if we were going to put something back into circulation as money, I see no reason why we couldn't start using silver among us. Of course, we have to have something that people are willing to sell and accept, let's say, silver. Silver, and the word silver was the word money also in the Old Testament Hebrew, word kesef. They were basically synonymous terms. There are only a couple exceptions to that rule. The problem I had with Norfed coin, and I didn't mean to, Fred, I think it was, who called from Pennsylvania. The problem I had with it, I think the same problem that you had, is that first off, they weighed the coin, the troy system. It was a 1 ounce coin. And then they would put a decimal value on the coin. And the decimal value did not correspond accurately to the troy.
I have some of those coins, and I think some of the same type coins have a denomination of 10 and 20. I believe they even got up to size 50.
The word dollar is a unit of weight measurement. It is not a unit of psychological value. There is so much confusion over the word value. The word value is used in both an objective and a subjective sense. And when Congress, for example, in Article 1, Section 8, Paragraph 5 of the Constitution, was given the power to coin money and regulate the value of coins, that was not regulating the psychological value of the coin, in other words, what the coin was worth. The value that they could regulate, and the only value they could regulate, was the objective value, which is the weight and purity of the coin. And if you go to Black's Law Dictionary, look up the word value, you go down the column, because it's a fairly lengthy definition that Black's will give you. It'll tell you at the bottom, particularly in the fifth edition, maybe sixth, that when it comes to Article 1, Section 8, Paragraph 5, that that value was the same for everyone everywhere, and that was the weight and purity of the coin, basically, they were talking about. And what I'm saying is that those Norfed coins should have said the weight of this coin is, let's say, $1.35. I think that's about as close as you get to one troy ounce if you convert from decimal to troy. Or the coin weighs one troy ounce. You can convert from troy into avoirdupois if you want to. I'm for what Thomas Jefferson had said when he wrote a letter to Alexander Hamilton. I have a copy of that letter. It appears in a book called The Perennial Contest for Sound Money. It was written in 1905, I believe, by A. Barton Hepburn, who was ex-comptroller of the currency of the United States, superintendent of banking for the state of New York, etc. He had great credentials. And he had an appendix in there, and he quotes Jefferson, who says that he, for one, would be for using the ounce instead of the dollar for measuring our coins. And I heartily agree with him. And that would have solved a problem that we don't even have time to get into, which is how we had a decimal system for weighing gold coins and another decimal system for weighing silver coins. Because a dollar weight of gold and a dollar weight of silver are not the same number of grains of gold or silver. That was a violation of the law of just weights and measures, which the Bible says we will not have a weight, a great and a small. Unfortunately, the Coinage Act of April 2nd, 1792, did just that. It created a weight, great and a small. Silver coin weighed 16 times more than gold coin, and they both said $1. And there's a reason why they did it, but it was not a good reason. And the reason they were able to get away with it, because we used dollars as a unit of measure for our coinage. If we had weighed those coins in ounces, never could have gotten away with a coin that was 16 times heavier than the other coin and declared that they both weighed 1 ounce. They couldn't possibly have both weighed the same.
So I think one problem is that a lot of people idealize the original Constitution or what took place at the origin of this country. And in many instances, it does parallel the Bible, but the Constitution is not our standard, whereas biblical law is our standard in the education of our people to God's law. We need to de-Judaize them from what's being taught, not only in the world system, but in a lot of the so-called patriot community.
Right. I don't believe the first Congress had intentionally tried to deceive the American people by violating the law of just weights and measures. I just don't think they understood what they did when they coined the two metals, gold and silver, the way they did, where you wound up with a $1 weight of gold at 25.8 grains, 90% pure, and then you had a $1 weight of silver, which was 412.5 grains of 90% pure silver. If they had known what they were doing, if they had had a preacher go to the halls of Congress when they were contemplating that first Coinage Act and said, look here what the Bible has to say, and look what Thomas Jefferson was suggesting that you do, weigh the coins in ounces instead of dollars. Or if you're going to weigh them in dollars, then both coins would have to have the same number of grains equal to the dollar. And they didn't do that. It was really a very confused system. And
well,
I think
Alexander
Hamilton,
an unintentional mistake has the same effect as deliberate deceit, in the long run, anyway.
Well, I think there probably was some deliberate deceit in the background. I believe that maybe Hamilton was acting on behalf of the banker cartel back in those days. But I think the reason, in fact, Thomas Jefferson even said that he regretted that he had deferred to Alexander Hamilton earlier on. But he thought that Hamilton understood banking and finance so much better than he did, Jefferson, that he would defer to Hamilton. And afterwards, he regretted, apparently, having done that. And I don't know if he believed that Hamilton was deceiving him or not. I don't remember all of the ins and outs of that. But if we had adopted just weights and measures, as the Bible said, I believe we still have silver and gold coinage today. But it would take me a few minutes to explain it because it's a bit esoteric.
Yeah, we only have a few minutes left in the program. I'd actually like to change directions a little bit. Over the years, one of the subjects you've spoken upon is licensing. Would you like to comment upon licensing tonight?
Well, certainly I'm not going to have time to get into that, but the word license, first off, has nothing to do with qualification. Most people think that a license is proof that you're competent to do something. If you look up the definition of a license in the law dictionary, you'll find out that the only competence required is the party granting the license be competent to grant the license. License is permission to do something that without a license would be illegal, unlawful, or a tort. A marriage license, for example, seems to be required in the minds of the average person. You have to have a license in order to get married. Well, the only license you would be married would be the permission of the father to marry the damsel. He's the one who has to give the permission. The state is not the party that gives the permission for you to marry. But if you look up the word marriage or marriage license, Black's Law Dictionary, for example, it's permission for a couple to intermarry. You look up the word intermarriage and it says see miscegenation. Look up miscegenation and it says interracial marriage as between a white and a Negro. Okay, now that was against the law. So you had to get a license apparently to do that.
And also any license gives the government control that they shouldn't have.
Yeah, well,
whether
the
it's
government
like
becomes the
in the
party,
case of marriage,
the
proof
is the
marriage
party. If
children.
The government's the granting party of the license, then it becomes a party that regulates that which it has licensed, whether it be the license of business or the licensing of travel up and down the highway and so forth. It's a bit of a complex issue. It's an interesting one. We could talk about that some other time, but I'm sure we don't have enough time to really get into that. But I got drawn into that issue because when I discovered that all public offices are required to keep their accounts current in money, not in legal tender, but in money. That's the law. I found out that I had a tool with which to do battle with the Babylonian system. And I had about 10 administrative battles that I was waging simultaneously almost 30 years ago. And I never lost one of those battles. But government agencies generally wouldn't take them on head on either. They would basically try to skirt the issue that I brought up. But all public offices are required to keep their accounts current money. The courts are required to keep their accounts current money. And there isn't a public office that does so. And so that brought me into conflict with every government agency out there. And I was running a business at that time, a food business. There's no way to pay property tax. There's no way to pay income tax. There's no way to pay any kind of a tax if you understand what the word payment means, and if you understand this issue, which we'll simply call the money issue, it became a powerful tool. But most people will not take time. They do not have the patience to examine this issue with an open mind and to realize...
Same with other issues that we...
Absolutely.
Mentioned in the ministry, like the fact that we are Israel, the white Anglo-Saxon, Germanic, and kindred people, the Caucasians that migrated through the Caucasus. That's a rough concept. They just don't want to look at it, most people. And there's other issues. I might invite our listeners to write. We have a tract on licensing, and we do have these booklets on money that I mentioned earlier, the comic book, The Temple of Imaginary Money, and the Babylon's Money by Pastor Comfrey, and many other subjects showing that we're Israel. Subjects concerning the law, Bible correspondence course, and the only way you're going to learn is by studying to show yourself approved. We have 2 minutes left. Bruce, do you want to wrap up any thoughts that you'd like to bring to the audience?
I guess I would just have to say it's really hard to know where to go in only 2 minutes' time, but I don't believe that the problems that we're facing with regards to an oppressive state. When I use the word state, I'm talking about government in general. The oppression that is coming upon the people worldwide is made possible by the credit system. there is no limit, basically, to the amount of power and control that is wielded by the tyrants of this world. In fact, what we're dealing with is the lifeblood of tyranny. And I think the caller from Ohio who had mentioned maybe Kublai Khan or whatever, the power that he had with his troops rested or was posited upon the economic clout that he had.
30 seconds.
Yeah, well, if you have the power to create artificial money, is there anybody you can't buy if you can get people to believe in that money? Or if you can force them, you can compel them to use it. And the American people are compelled to use so-called dollars because that's what the government wants when it comes to tax payments.
I'd like to thank you for being our guest again tonight, and I'd invite our listeners to tune in each week. We have pre-recorded broadcasts most Sundays and live broadcasts for Sunday.
We pray that your spiritual ears have received today's message and that you are fed with strong meat relevant to solving the needs of our nation and Christian civilization everywhere. Herald of Truth is sponsored by Kingdom Identity Ministries through the financial support and prayers of listeners like you who love the truth of God's Word and want to see it broadcast throughout the land to awaken His people. If you would like a
CD
of today's message, tell us the date and station to which you are listening and send a donation to cover our cost plus help with radio time to Kingdom Identity Ministries, Post Office Box 1021, Harrison, Arkansas, 72602. We would appreciate donations made by our international listeners to be in U.S. funds. For a free introductory packet of information, including our doctrinal statement of beliefs, plus lists of books and tapes to aid you in your study of biblical truth, write Kingdom Identity Ministries, Post Office Box 1021, Harrison, Arkansas, 72602, USA. Or request this material by calling 870-741-1119. That's 870-741-1119. Visit our internet website by going to www.kingidentity.com. Type www.kingidentity.com. We invite you to listen regularly to Herald of Truth broadcast for more dynamic messages proclaiming the gospel of the kingdom at this same time and station.